Welcome to the Deep Dive. You brought us a really interesting piece today. It's an ebook, Comprehensive ISO 45001, Mastering Occupational Health and Safety Management Systems.
That's right, from iohso.com, and it's pretty fresh, dated July 23rd, 2024.
So yeah, hot off the press. And our focus today, naturally, is digging into ISO 45001.
Exactly. And we want to frame this not just as, you know, a set of regulations. Think of it more like a blueprint.
A blueprint for creating a safer workplace.
Yeah, a workplace where health and safety are really core values, not just add-ons. So our mission here is to pull out the most critical bits from this ebook for you,
giving you a clear idea of what ISO 45001 is all about, and maybe more importantly, why it actually matters for your organization.
Precisely. It goes beyond just ticking boxes.
Right. It's about fostering an environment, a culture, really, where people feel safe, valued, protected at work.
And the ebook actually gives us a roadmap. It's structured into modules.
Introduction and context, leadership, planning.
Support, operations, performance evaluation, and then improvement will follow that structure.
Sounds like a plan. Let's dive into module one then. Introduction and context. What's the fundamental goal here?
At its core, ISO 45001 is about improving employee safety. Simple as that, really.
But also reducing risks.
Absolutely. Reducing workplace risks and creating better, healthier working conditions globally. It was published back in March 2018.
By ISO, the International Organization for Standardization.
Correct. So it's been around a little while now.
And it offers a systematic approach, right? The ebook makes it clear this isn't just for huge corporations.
No, definitely not. Organizations of all sizes, any industry really, can use this framework to proactively boost their occupational health and safety performance.
Okay, so proactively is a key word there. And what are the benefits for you, the listener, thinking about implementing this?
Well, first off, it helps build a real safety culture when you get employees involved.
Participation is key, you mean?
Yes, active participation. That often leads to better morale, maybe even higher productivity. People just work better when they feel safe and, you know, valued.
That makes intuitive sense. And there are practical benefits too, aren't there? The ebook talks about costs.
Oh, absolutely. Fewer incidents, fewer accidents. That can mean lower insurance premiums.
And fewer costs tied to accidents themselves. Medical bills, compensation, downtime.
Exactly. The ebook gives a couple of real-world examples. A manufacturing company, for instance, that cut down injuries significantly.
Which means less disruption, better output.
And a construction firm that used ISO 45001 to really improve their safety training made the site safer, workers happier.
So tangible results, not just theory.
Definitely not. Now, some listeners might know the older standard, OHSA's 18001.
Ah, yes. What's changed? What are the key differences with ISO 45001?
The ebook points out a few key upgrades. First is the structure. It uses the high-level structure, or HLS.
Okay, HLS. What does that mean practically?
It's basically a common template used by other big ISO standards, like ISO 9001 for quality.
And 14001 for environment.
Exactly. So if you're already using those, integrating 45001 becomes, well, a lot easier. It's more coherent.
All right, saves time and effort on the integration side. Smart. What else is different?
There's a much stronger emphasis now on leadership. Top management's role is really highlighted.
So it needs buy-in from the very top.
Absolutely. And not just buy-in, but active involvement. Plus, there's a stronger focus on worker participation, too, getting everyone involved.
Makes sense. Leadership drives it, but everyone contributes. Is there a third key change?
Yes, the approach. ISO 45001 requires a proactive, risk-based approach.
Instead of just reacting when things go wrong.
Precisely. It's about identifying risks and opportunities related to health and safety before incidents happen. Prevention is the name of the game.
Okay, so proactive, stronger leadership focus, and that common HLS structure.
Got it.
The ebook also defines some key terms in lesson two. We should probably cover those quickly.
Good idea. First up, occupational health and safety, or OH&S.
What does that encompass?
It's pretty broad. All the conditions and factors affecting the well-being, physical, mental, safety of everyone at the workplace.
Not just employees.
No, includes temps, contractors, visitors, anyone impacted by the work environment. It's holistic.
Okay, comprehensive. What about risk? How's that defined?
Risk is about the likelihood of something harmful happening combined with how severe the outcome, like injury or ill health, could be.
And managing that risk is central.
Absolutely. Identify, assess, control. That's the mantra. Staying ahead of potential problems.
And a hazard. What's the difference?
A hazard is the source of potential harm. Could be chemicals, machinery, bad ergonomics, anything with the inherent potential to cause injury or illness.
Right. The potential source. And lastly, incident?
An incident is any work-related event that could or does result in injury or ill health.
So it includes near misses too, those close calls.
Yes. Crucially, the ebook stresses learning from near misses just as much as actual incidents. They're valuable warnings.
Valuable warnings, okay. Good definitions. Now, the ebook also introduces some core principles like the Plan-Do-Check-Act cycle, PDCA.
Yes, PDCA. Think of it as the engine for continuous improvement. Four stages.
Plan, do, check, act.
Right, exactly. Plan. Right. Identify risks, set objectives, plan processes, do, implement the plan, carry out the processes.
Check.
Check. Monitor performance, measure things, audit, check compliance.
And act.
Act. Take actions to improve based on the check phase. Then you repeat the cycle. Always refining.
A practical loop for getting better.
Oh.
Another principle mentioned is worker participation. Why is that so vital?
Because the people doing the work often know the risks best. ISO 45001 really emphasizes involving them.
How, like, consultation?
Consultation, yes.
Yeah.
Getting their input on risk assessments, on control measures, involving them when incidents are investigated, their insights make the system work better.
Makes total sense.
Yeah.
And the final principle you mentioned earlier, leadership and commitment. This seems like a recurring theme.
It really is. Top management has to show they're serious. Set the policy, provide resources, promote that safety culture.
Their visible commitment sends a message.
A powerful one. That safety is a real priority.
Okay, so we've got the purpose, the benefits for you, the evolution from OHSS 1801, key terms, and guiding principles. Let's look at the structure, the 10 clauses. Lesson 3 covers this.
Yep. Clause 1 is scope applies to any organization wanting an OH&S system.
Okay. Clause 2, normative references.
Interestingly, there aren't really any external ones cited. It's quite self-contained.
Stands on its own. Clause 3 is terms and definitions, which we've touched on. What about clause 4?
Context of the organization. Big one. Understanding internal and external factors affecting your OH&S system.
Like regulations, economy, technology.
Externally, yes. And internally.
Mm.
Culture, structure, processes, resources. Plus understanding worker needs, interested parties, and defining the system's scope.
Scope meaning what locations, activities.
What's covered by the system. It's about seeing the bigger picture.
Right. Understanding your operating environment. Clause 5.
Leadership and worker participation. We've hit this hard already top management commitment, the policy, roles, responsibilities, and ensuring that worker participation happens.
Leadership sets direction. Participation makes it real. Clause 6.
Planning. This is where you tackle risks and opportunities, set those OH&S objectives, and plan how to achieve them. Strategic stuff.
Okay. And clause 7.
Support. All the resources needed. People, money, infrastructure, information, also competence, awareness, communication, documented info, the foundations.
The foundations, yeah. Then clause 8 moves into action.
Exactly. Operation. Operational planning and control, managing change, emergency preparedness, putting plans into practice safely.
Day-to-day safety, clause 9.
Performance evaluation. Monitoring, measuring, analyzing performance. Includes internal audits, management reviews, checking how well it's all working.
Holding yourselves accountable, which leads logically to the last one.
Clause 10, improvement. Taking action to continually enhance the system. Addressing non-conformities, corrective actions, striving for better performance. Back to that PDCA cycle.
A neat loop. Okay, let's dig into clause 4, a bit more context of the organization. Lesson 4 focuses here. Why is understanding context so fundamental?
Because your OH&S system doesn't exist in a vacuum. External factors, regulations changing, economic pressures, new tech, social views on safety, they all influence you.
And internal factors too.
Absolutely. Your company culture around safety, how you're structured, your processes, the resources you actually have. A place with a strong safety culture already might find this easier.
The ebook mentions tools like SWOT and PESL analysis here.
Yeah.
How might you use those for OH&S?
Well, SWOT strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats could highlight, say, a strength like a skilled safety team or a weakness like old machinery.
An opportunity might be new safety tech. A threat may be tougher regulations.
Exactly. And PESL, political, economic, social, technological, legal, environmental, gives that broader external view. Legal changes are obvious, but social attitudes towards safety matter too. These tools just help structure that analysis for you.
Provide a framework.
Okay.
The ebook also stresses understanding the needs of workers and interested parties. Who falls into that second group?
It's broad, employees, obviously, but also contractors, suppliers, customers, regulators, even the local community.
And they all have different expectations about safety.
Potentially, yes. Workers want a safe environment. Regulators want compliance. The community might worry about environmental safety aspects.
So how do you figure out these needs? Surveys? Meetings?
All of the above. Surveys, interviews, focus groups, safety committee meetings, talking directly to regulators. Open communication is crucial.
Direct communication, right. Mm. And finally, Clause 4 involves defining the scope of the OH&S system. What exactly does that mean?
That's setting the boundaries. Which physical sites are covered? Which specific activities, products, services fall under the OH&S management system?
So for a construction company, it might be active sites, the main office, maybe equipment yards.
Precisely. And make sure your safety efforts are focused and relevant to your actual operations. That's clear parameters.
Clear parameters. Got it. Okay, moving to Module 2, Leadership and Worker Participation. Lesson 5 kicks off with Leadership and Commitment Clause 5.1. This feels central.
It really is. The ebook hammers home the role of top management, CEOs, directors, senior folks. They have to demonstrate leadership.
How? What are their specific responsibilities?
Setting the OH&S policy, first off. Making sure the OH&S system is integrated into the core business, not just a side project. And crucially, allocating enough resources.
It's more than just signing off then. The ebook mentions active participation.
Yes, very important. Things like actually doing site safety visits, participating in safety meetings, getting involved in investigating major incidents.
That visibility matters.
Hugely. It shows commitment, fosters that safety culture. The ebook cites a global manufacturer where CEO involvement in safety audits directly led to fewer accidents and better morale. Leading by example works.
Leading by example, definitely. How does this leadership create that culture where safety is a core value?
Several ways. Setting clear, smart safety objectives aligned with business strategy, fostering continuous improvement, encouraging ideas from below.
And communication.
Critical. Effective two-way communication. Sharing policies, procedures, yes, but also creating channels where workers feel safe, reporting hazards, you know, without fear of comeback. That trust is vital.
That open dialogue piece sounds key. The ebook mentions a construction company using toolbox talks to boost hazard reporting.
Exactly. Those regular, accessible channels make a real difference. People feel heard and empowered. Now let's talk about the OH&S policy itself, Clause 5.2, Lesson 6, the formal commitment statement.
Right. The ebook says it's a formal written statement of intent. It needs to reflect the organization's context and stakeholder needs. What makes a good policy for you?
Key elements include a clear statement of intent preventing injury, providing safe conditions, a framework for setting OH&S objectives aligned with strategy and reviewed regularly.
Needs a commitment to legal compliance, too.
Absolutely. Commitment to meet legal and other requirements, and importantly, emphasizing worker participation and consultation. It's a comprehensive declaration.
A comprehensive declaration. The example of the transportation company's policy, what stood out there?
Their policy had very clear, specific commitments and a defined process for regular review, keeping it relevant.
But a great policy isn't enough if nobody knows about it, right? Communication is key again.
Definitely. Lesson 6 really stresses communicating the policy to everyone, employees, contractors, suppliers, regulators.
How do you do that effectively? Posters, handbooks.
All of those. Make it available, display it, put it in handbooks, cover it in training, especially onboarding, and again, top management reinforcing it constantly by leading by example.
The healthcare example showed a multi-channel approach orientation, bulletins, town halls.
Yeah, hitting it from multiple angles helps it sink in. Now, Clause 5.3, Lesson 7 covers roles, responsibilities, and authorities. This is about clarity.
Yes, making sure everyone knows their part in keeping the workplace safe. Accountability.
Exactly. The ebook emphasizes clear definitions are essential. Everyone needs to know what they're supposed to do.
Can you outline the typical roles and responsibilities?
Sure. Top management, ultimate responsibility, policy, resources, leadership. Middle manager, supervisors. Implement things, risk assessments, controls, team training.
What about safety officers or committees?
They often handle oversight, audits, incident investigation, communication, engaging workers, and workers themselves have responsibilities too.
Like following procedures, reporting hazards, doing the training.
Precisely. The chemical company example in the ebook had detailed job descriptions outlining safety duties for each role. That level of clarity is vital.
Vital for accountability. And this clause also loops back to worker participation.
It does. It highlights mechanisms like safety committees for discussion and consultation, suggestion schemes to get ideas for improvement, and regular safety meetings for open dialogue.
The logistics company example used meetings and a suggestion scheme effectively.
Right. It's about providing multiple ways for workers to contribute their knowledge and help shape that safety culture.
Multiple avenues for contribution. Okay, foundation built. Let's move to Module 3, Planning. Starting with Clause 6.1, Lesson 8, Actions to Address Risks and Opportunities. This is the core of proactive risk management for you.
Absolutely. The ebook calls risk management a cornerstone. It breaks down the process. Hazard identification first, finding potential harm sources.
Then risk assessment.
Yes, evaluating likelihood and severity to prioritize. Then risk control, implementing measures using that hierarchy of controls.
And finally, monitoring.
Monitoring and review, yeah. Checking if controls are actually working.
That hierarchy of controls is important. Can you remind us quickly? Elimination first.
Yes. Elimination, get rid of the hazard completely. Most effective. Then substitution, replace it with something less hazardous.
Followed by engineering controls.
Right. Physical changes to the workplace or equipment. Then administrative controls, changing procedures or work practices.
And last resort is PPE.
Personal protective equipment, yes. Least effective as a primary control. Always try to tackle the hazard at the source first.
Makes sense. Fix the cause, not just the symptom. The manufacturing company example had a good hazard ID program. What made it work?
They used multiple methods, employee feedback, incident reports, regular audits, a multifaceted approach to catch everything, combined with rigorous risk assessment.
Now, Clause 6.1 isn't just about risks, but opportunities too.
Correct. It's not just preventing bad things, but also finding ways to actively improve OH&S performance. Beneficial effects.
How do you spot those opportunities? Incident reports again, audits.
Those plus employee suggestions, looking at industry trends, new technologies. You address risks with controls, but you leverage opportunities maybe through better training, new tech, more engagement.
A healthcare example used implementing a new IT system as an opportunity to improve patient safety through better data.
Exactly. An operational change driving a safety improvement. And Clause 6.1 also covers legal compliance, right? Foundational stuff. Oh, absolutely non-negotiable. You have to identify all relevant laws, standards, internal policies, keep a register, ensure compliance through audits, training, procedures. The construction company example showed a robust legal compliance program. Understanding the rules is key.
Vital part of planning. Now, Clause 6.2, Lesson 9, OH&S objectives and planning to achieve them. Setting safety goals.
And the ebook stresses using SMART objectives.
Yes. Specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, time-bound. Drives continuous improvement. These objectives should come from your context analysis, risk assessments, incident learnings, performance data. Target your biggest risks and best opportunities.
Can you give a couple of examples of SMART OH&S objectives?
Sure. Like reduce recordable accidents by 15% in 12 months, or achieve 95% completion for mandatory safety training by end of Q3, or roll out ergonomic assessments for all workstations in 6 months.
Clear, actionable targets. Once you have the objectives, what's next?
Develop a detailed action plan. What tasks are needed? What resources? Who's responsible? What are the timelines? And importantly, what KPIs will track progress? A roadmap, basically.
Exactly. Based on risk assessments, considering stakeholder needs, then you implement the plan, mobilize resources, train people.
And then you monitor it.
Constantly. Monitor and evaluate effectiveness using those KPIs. Review progress, identify roadblocks, adjust the plan as needed. It's dynamic. The manufacturing example showed a detailed plan that helped them hit their targets. Plan, do, check, adjust.
Plan, do, check, adjust. Got it. Okay, planning covered. Module 4, support. Lesson 10 starts with Clause 7.1, resources. Pretty obvious you need resources, but what's the key takeaway?
It's critical to determine and provide the necessary resources, financial, human, physical, informational, based on your context and objectives.
It is not a one-off.
No, it's an ongoing commitment, needs regular review. The logistics company example showed them proactively planning resources for an expansion, anticipating needs.
Within resources, competence and training get special focus. Why?
Because competent people are fundamental to safety. You need to identify required competencies, skills, knowledge, experience for key roles.
Assess current staff against those needs.
Right, and address any gaps with training classroom, OJT, workshops, online, whatever works.
And it's continuous.
Yes, ongoing development. Evaluate competence, provide refresher training, keep skills sharp. The healthcare example had a comprehensive ongoing program. Right people, right skills, kept up to date.
Right skills kept sharp. Okay, clauses 7.2 and 7.3 in lesson 11. Awareness and communication.
Mm.
Seems basic, but crucial for culture.
Absolutely. Awareness means employees understand the policy, their roles, the hazards, the procedures. It fuels the safety culture.
How do you build awareness? Training, posters.
Training, briefings, posters, newsletters, digital channels, regular refreshers tailored to different groups, and engagement reinforces it, get people involved. The construction example used awareness campaigns effectively. Make it resonate.
Make it resonate. And communication, internal and external.
Yes, internal. Keeping everyone inside informed about policy, procedures, objectives, performance, using meetings, briefings, intranet. Make it accessible, understandable. Communicating with stakeholders outside. Performance, legal compliance, significant incidents, perhaps. Using reports, press releases, stakeholder meetings. Accuracy and timeliness are key externally. Maintain trust. The pharma company example had a good strategy for both.
Transparency is vital. Lastly, under support, clause 7.5, lesson 12, documented information, records and procedures.
Exactly. Policies, procedures, risk assessments, incident reports, training records, they ensure consistency, accountability, traceability.
Need a process for creating and updating them. Keep them accurate.
Yes. And reviewed regularly. Document control is also vital approval, issue, distribution. Prevents using outdated info. The aerospace example showed a rigorous system. Manage the documents effectively.
Manage the documents. What about controlling them? Storage, retrieval.
Need secure storage, physical and digital. Easy retrieval, good organization. Protection from damage, loss, unauthorized access. Defined retention periods, meeting regulations, and secure disposal methods. The financial services example showed a robust system covering all this. Manage the whole life cycle.
Manage the whole document life cycle.
Got it.
Okay. Support covered. Module 5, operation and performance evaluation. Clause 8.1, lesson 13, operational planning and control, where the rubber meets the road.
That's a good way to put it. Implementing and maintaining safety day to day. Planning and putting those operational controls into action, the ones identified in risk assessment.
Engineering controls, administrative,
QE. Yes, allocating resources for them, training people on them, monitoring effectiveness. The manufacturing example tackled noise using engineering controls like dampening, plus administrative controls like limiting exposure time. Practical action.
Practical action. Clause 8.1 also mentions managing change. Why is that so critical?
Because any change, new process, new equipment, new people can introduce new hazards or affect existing controls. You need a systematic approach.
Like assessing impact before the change happens.
Exactly. Identify the change, assess OH&S impact, implement controls beforehand, consult affected employees, document it, communicate it. Proactive management of potential disruption.
Proactive management. Mm-hmm. And emergency preparedness is also key here.
Absolutely essential. Need plans for fires, spills, disasters, evacuation procedures, communication protocols, first aid.
And practice them. Drills.
Yes. Regular drills are crucial. Make sure everyone knows what to do and the plan works. The chemical plant example had a comprehensive plan with regular drills involving emergency services too. Practice makes perfect, especially then.
Especially then. Okay, moving to checking performance. Clauses 9.1 and 9.2.
Yeah.
Lesson 14. Performance evaluation. Measuring and analyzing.
Precisely. Key activities. Monitoring ongoing observation against plans. Measurement quantifying OH&S data like incident rates, exposure levels.
Analysis.
Interpreting the data, finding trends, patterns, concerns, and evaluation, the overall assessment of the system's effectiveness based on all that info. The construction example showed a good program for monitoring key metrics. Gather the data, make sense of it.
Make sense of it. Clause 9.2 is the internal audit program. What's its main job?
It's an independent check. Does the system conform to ISO 45001? Is it implemented effectively? Is it maintained? Helps find non-conformances, opportunities for improvement.
What's the audit process? Plan, conduct.
Develop an audit plan. Scope, objectives, criteria. Conduct the audit. Gather objective evidence. Document findings in a report. And crucially, implement corrective actions for any issues found. The pharma example showed regular, thorough audits. Check yourself proactively.
Check yourself proactively, which leads to clause 9.3, lesson 15, management review. A higher level look.
Exactly. Formal evaluation by top management at planned intervals. Assesses the system's overall suitability, adequacy, effectiveness, strategic decisions for improvement. Leadership steps back for the big picture.
How does that review work? schedule, collect data.
Set a schedule. Collect relevant data performance info, audit results, incidents, feedback. Top management evaluates it against objectives, looks at control effectiveness, compliance, resource adequacy, training, safety culture. The tech company example involved comprehensive annual reviews. A deep dive for leadership.
A deep dive. What goes into the review and what comes out?
Key inputs. Status of previous actions, changes in context, performance trends, objective achievement, resource adequacy, training effectiveness, worker participation results.
And outputs.
Decisions and actions for system improvement, performance improvement, decisions on resources, recommendations for changes to policy or objectives. The transportation example show reviews leading to tangible safety improvements. A crucial feedback loop for strategic change.
A crucial strategic feedback loop.
Yeah.
Okay, finally, module 6, improvement. Clause 10, lesson 16. Continual improvement takes center stage.
Absolutely. It's ongoing, not a one-off. The ebook discusses general strategies, fostering a culture of improvement, open communication, engagement, learning from experience.
Using PDCA again.
Yes, the PDCA cycle for structured improvement. And benchmarking, comparing your performance to others or standards to find gaps. The auto manufacturer example used PDCA to improve safety training. Embed that always getting better mindset.
Embed that mindset. Clause 10 also covers incident investigation and corrective actions, critical for learning.
Invaluable. Incidents, even near misses, are learning opportunities. Process starts with prompt, accurate reporting and documenting.
Then investigate thoroughly. Find root causes.
Yes, using methods like 5 whys or fishbone diagrams. Once you know the root cause, develop and implement effective corrective actions, process changes, training updates, equipment mods.
Assign responsibility, set timelines, check effectiveness.
Exactly. Monitor to ensure the fix works and prevents recurrence. The chemical plant example showed how a thorough investigation after a spill led to significant corrective actions. Turn negatives into positive learning.
Turn negatives into positives. And the overarching theme is continual improvement itself.
It is the fundamental principle. Ongoing effort to enhance the system's suitability, adequacy, effectiveness needs leadership commitment, employee engagement, use performance data, involve employees, stay informed on best practices and requirement changes. The healthcare example showed continuous improvement embedded in patient safety with great results. A holistic, never-ending journey.
A holistic, never-ending journey. Well, this has been incredibly thorough. A real deep dive into ISO 45001, thanks to that ebook you brought in.
It really is a comprehensive standard, and as the ebook concludes, it gives you a strong framework for managing risks, fostering participation, ensuring compliance. But real success, that comes down to commitment to continual improvement.
And everyone being engaged, right?
Everyone in the organization making safety a priority.
Yeah, it's clear implementing ISO 45001 isn't just about compliance. It's really about building that safety culture.
A culture where people feel valued, protected. Through proactive risk management, good communication, and that commitment to learning.
So the message for you, our listeners, is take these ideas back to your organization.
Definitely. Engage with colleagues, share best practices, always look for those opportunities to improve safety performance.
Absolutely. And maybe a final thought to leave you with. How could these core ISO 45001 principles, proactive risk management, leadership commitment, worker participation, continuous improvement, how could they apply beyond safety?
Interesting question. To other areas of organizational well-being, or even overall effectiveness.
Something to think about. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.